We're moving on with our series, Searching for the Truth on Origins. And now we examine the topic of our own origins, where we came from. In this session, session number 7, we want to talk about the evolutionary perspective, the belief that man has evolved from lower levels of consciousness. Of course, the idea is that monkeys and apes are our cousins. We begin with a portion of Scripture, which I think is very relative to this presentation. Isaiah 55, verses 7 and 8. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. In this presentation, we're going to look at man's thoughts regarding man's origin. In the next session, session 8, we're going to look at God's thoughts and human origins. And we're going to see that man's thoughts compared to God's thoughts when it comes to this topic of human origins are as high as the heavens are above the earth. Two widely contrasting views. Let us begin by examining some of the claims of the evolutionary worldview regarding human origins. First of all, I want to look at this textbook. It's called Ape Man, and the subtitle is The Story of Human Evolution. Interesting subtitle. You see, evolutionists claim that they are able to verify the lineage of man, that is, we have arisen from these brute ape-like creatures, and that this can be done scientifically. And remember our definition of science. Science must be based on facts, observable evidence, experimentation. We can't rely upon stories. We must have physical, observable evidence. And through this presentation, I will emphasize that many things that are proposed to us in the name of science, suggesting that we've evolved from these lower brute-like creatures, is based on wild speculation. In the introduction of this book, there's a picture of Walter Cronkite. The reason being is that Ape Man, that is the book, has been also made into a TV series, which I have seen. Walter Cronkite, here you see standing in front of an African church. The camera interviews Walter Cronkite, and he makes a statement similar to this. He said, this documentary is going to search for the truth on the origin of man. He said, well, there are many people who believe that God created us, and at that point the camera pans to a view inside the church where African natives are singing hymns and worshiping God. He says, while we respect their beliefs, this documentary will show you scientifically that it has been proven that we have evolved. Well, Walter Cronkite is a rather influential person. In fact, it's videos like this and textbooks like this who have influenced people worldwide into believing that we have evolved. Here's a statement taken from the introduction of the book. Based on interviews with leading scientists working all over the world, Ape Man explores the story of our evolution and of the people who have devoted their lives to discovering the truth about origins. Remember what our series is about? We're searching for the truth about origins. And as you can see, evolutionists believe that that's what they're doing and that they've discovered the truth about our origins. And then it continues. There have been many species of human-like creatures in the past. Now, all but Homo sapiens are extinct. This is a very important statement. Let me repeat it. There have been many species of human-like creatures in the past. You mean there's none today? No. Only Homo sapiens. So, in the search for truth, according to this textbook, Ape Man, we are going to reconstruct the creatures who lived in the past that were on their way to becoming man. They're all extinct. There isn't one that you can find anywhere in the world today that's alive. We have these ape-like creatures and we have man. But there's nothing in between that's living. They all lived in the past. And so in the search for truth for human origins, we have to reconstruct what they look like. It continues, if we can understand the past, we may be able to understand why we are the way we are today, and perhaps we can find clues to our future. Well, we've all seen these representatives that supposedly existed in the past. Remember, there's none alive. So they have to be reconstructed. Well, in some cases, we're going to see fabricated. Here's a typical illustration showing the lineage of man. Over on the left-hand bottom corner, we see an ape-like creature squatting on the ground. The next one, well, obviously standing up. And then in the next picture, becoming a little bit more modern. And then on the right-hand side, we see sort of a caveman-looking kind of creature, but he's on his way to becoming modern man. National Geographic typically promotes the evolutionary view of human origins. And here in this mural, we see two different groups of human beings at different layers or levels of the evolutionary development. On the right-hand side, we see a group of people and they're hunting and, well, they have sticks and stones. But on the left-hand side, well, they're a little bit more primitive. So they just have bones. See, this impression is that as we go back in time, our ancestors were more primitive. Scientists attempt to reconstruct what our ancestors looked like based on fragments of fossils. Here we see, for example, taken from the book Ape Man, how Homo erectus was reconstructed. Notice a skull cap and a portion of a skull. And then on the right we see, well, the scientists were able to reconstruct the fleshy features of the face. And also they were able then to reconstruct the whole society by showing us this painting and what they were doing. And by the way, even know exactly when they lived. As we look through various textbooks on the subject of human origins, we are bombarded with paintings and illustrations of what these extinct ancestors look like, how they lived. And by the way, there are many people who get their science from Hollywood movies. But again, in reality, there's a lot of speculation. Unfortunately, many people embrace it. Here's a Time magazine. This goes back to the late 1970s when Richard Leakey was a fairly young man and he's squatting next to an African native who's wearing a Hollywood mask. Notice the subtitle on the front page, How Man Became Man. Richard Leakey was unsatisfied the way Hollywood artists had made the mask to represent what he believed Homo habilis looked like. It took several attempts. So what you're seeing here is an African native wearing a mask. Is that really valid in terms of supporting the evidence of how we've evolved? Or front cover of Discover magazine, the ape in your past, he's a lot closer than you think. You see, popular magazines and journals are constantly bombarding us with this information, relating us to the ape-like creatures, saying that we've evolved, or how apes became human. Time magazine, July 23rd, 2001. What a new discovery tells scientists about how our oldest ancestors stood on two legs and made an evolutionary leap. Here's a textbook which I purchased at the university where I used to take classes and teach. The Human Odyssey, 4 Million Years of Evolution. And in the foreword, we read this statement. Education is the great liberator. It frees us to think objectively. My students have taught me to respect the natural world. They've also taught me that all humans have a common origin and therefore a common destiny. The outcome that will be determined by humankind itself. We do have a capacity to make the future a long and fruitful one, only if we take the time to learn who we are and how we fit into the natural world. Donald Carl Johansson, PhD, Institute of Human Origins. course, Johansson is quite famous in his proposal of ape-man creatures, one of being Lucy. In this book, The Human Odyssey, we are given a number of suggestions of what our ancestors may have looked like. By the way, these are paintings of lemur-like creatures, and according to this textbook, yes, these are our cousins. As you see in this lineage, we have lemurs, tarsiers, South American monkeys, old world monkeys, gibbons, orangutans, gorillas, chimpanzees, and humans. And there you see the common connection according to the idea of evolution. This is what is taught in universities as acceptable in terms of human origins. Well, what I would like to do in this particular session is to look at some of the claims that have been proposed in the past of the lineage of man, that is, the so-called intermediates between the ape creatures and mankind. And there are many of them. We can only look at a few. So we will choose some in this proposed lineage of man. Notice on the left-hand side, the monkey-like creature, and on the right-hand side, modern man. And remember in the introduction of ape man, there have been many ape-like creatures that have lived in the past, but they're all extinct. So let's examine some of the claims. Here's one. It was proposed a number of years ago as a credible link in the ape man lineage. It's called Ramapithecus. Ramapithecus was first formulated based on two portions of jawbone, one found in Africa and the other in Turkey. And the teeth, they thought, were more human-like than ape-like. So from this, Ramapithecus was reconstructed. There we have the painting. Notice what Ramapithecus looks like. Well, they seem to know a lot of details. They could see how long his arms were, how stooped over he was when he walked, how much hair on the body, the features of the face, even the length of the large toe. Science Digest, April 1981, states, nevertheless, a reinterpretation of Ramapithecus' human-like jaw by David Pilbeam of Yale, one of the experts on the species, now suggests that Ramapithecus was an ancestor of neither modern humans nor modern apes. Instead, Pilbeam thinks it represents a third lineage that has no living descendants. So at one time, it was in the lineage of man, it was removed, and for this reason. Then we have Australopithecus. Australopithecus, found in the early 1900s by Dr. Dart, by Dr. Lewis Leakey. And as you can see from this skull, it doesn't look human-like at all. But they believed that it deserved a place in the lineage of man, that it's on its way to becoming man. And certainly the artists were able to reconstruct from the skull and other fossil remains what Australopithecus may have looked like. And again, we see this painting of a creature part ape, part human. From the book Ape Man, well, now we have a portrait. But again, keep in mind what you are seeing. These are paintings done by modern artists attempting to explain what our ancestors looked like in the past. And notice on the left-hand side of the screen, there's a whole family of these part ape, part human-like creatures based on fossils that don't look human in any way. Richard Leakey, the son of Lewis Leakey, in the late 1970s, removed Australopithecus from the chart. At least that was his opinion. And it made his father so angry. His father was the one who had placed Australopithecus in the chart. It made his father so angry he quit speaking to his son for several months. Here we see on this particular chart Australopithecus that was removed. Donald Carl Johansson, who had written the foreword of the book that I showed you earlier, The Human Journey, discovered Lucy, and he said, well, Lucy is an Australopithecine. It belongs in the lineage of man. And so he was at a great debate with Richard Leakey, saying that for sure this fossil that he discovered proved conclusively that Australopithecus was on its way to becoming modern man. He said it was determined based on the knee joints, showing that it walked upright, and also the hip joint. And other anthropologists or evolutionists suggested, you know what, Lucy is nothing more than like a chimpanzee. It does not deserve its place in the lineage of man. In the book Ape Man, we see this photograph of the fossil, Lucy. And you will notice it's only a partial fossil, and you will notice that there's not a complete knee joint. But also notice that in the bottom right-hand corner of this page, there is a knee joint. Why is that there? Well, if you read carefully in the fine print over on the left-hand side, you will read this statement. An afarensis locking knee joint from the same area inset provided a clear clue that its owner walked upright. You see, when Johansson was traveling around the country giving lectures on Lucy being in the lineage of man, he carried this knee joint with him. And on one particular occasion, he was asked by someone who was at attendance where he found the knee joint. He reluctantly told them. The answer? The knee joint was found 2 miles away in a strata, 2 miles away in a strata 200 feet lower. Wasn't even found with the fossil. So, often we see that some of these paleontologists do everything they can in order to try to support their views that these ape-like creatures belong in the human lineage, not always based on fact and truth. In the book Ape Man, we see this group picture of Lucy and her relatives showing Lucy coming out of the trees and beginning to walk upright. But again, this is not a photograph. It's merely an artist's representation. When we look back historically regarding how this lineage of man came about, it's important to go back to the time of Ernest Haeckel, shortly after Darwin wrote his book, The Origin of Species. Charles Darwin had laid out the idea that through time there's a progression from lower to higher, from simple to complex. And although he did not state it clearly that humans had evolved from monkeys, of course, it was inferred. And one of his greatest supporters was a German zoologist by the name of Ernest Haeckel. Ernest Haeckel was convinced that Darwin was correct. In fact, he was willing to propose that it would only be a matter of time when a missing link would be found showing the connection between ape-like creatures and humans. And this is how the first fossil of Homo erectus was discovered. First of all, let me point out to you that Ernest Haeckel was so enthusiastic that there would be a link found between apes and humans, he decided to have one reconstructed before anything had been found. That is, he hired an artist to paint what the missing link would look like when it was found. And here we have the famous Pithecanthropus Allis and his mate and also a child. Ernest Haeckel had an artist paint what the missing link would look like before anything was found. Now, Ernest Haeckel had a graduate student by the name of Eugene Dubois. And Eugene Dubois was instructed by Haeckel to find the missing link, and he even told him where he would likely find it, in Indonesia. And this is how Homo erectus first came about. Dutch archaeologist Eugene Dubois went to Indonesia, Java, and he himself actually didn't find these fossils. He hired some ex-convicts who were out on parole to go out and do the digging. They found a skull cap of a gibbon. And then the following year, 50 feet away in that same location, a human leg bone and some molar teeth. Dubois was reluctant to announce that he'd found the missing link, but later after discussions with Ernest Haeckel, he was convinced that, yes, he had. And so Java Man first appeared. And here is a model of Java Man based on the skull cap of an ape and a human leg bone. Before Dubois died, he admitted publicly actually what he had discovered. Here is a model of Pithecanthropus erectus, Java Man, which I took a picture in the Museum of Natural History in Beijing, where it stands today. Then we have Neanderthal. Neanderthal is commonly considered to be one of these creatures that's evolving on its way up to become a modern man, rather brute-like. And the first fossils of Neanderthal that were found, they saw that the brow of the skull was somewhat pronounced. The joints were enlarged. And so it was announced that a missing link had been found between apes and humans, brute-like creature that existed in the past on its way to becoming modern man. And this was one of the first depictions of Neanderthal. And you will note it's very brute-like, very ape-like, and he's carrying a club. Well, numerous fossils of Neanderthal have been found, and also scientists have reconsidered their interpretation. The brain capacity of Neanderthal actually is larger than ours. But they've also discovered that the reason that there was a brow pronouncement and the joints were swollen is because these were a group of people that suffered from some kind of a dietary deficiency, perhaps like a bone disease like rickets. Modern man is not any different than Neanderthal other than these joint enlargements. And Neanderthal, as I said, has a larger brain. So there has to have been a reinterpretation. And now we see Neanderthal, as you can see, he's lost a lot of hair. Instead of a club, he carries a sharpened stick. You see, this search for the truth on human origins has covered nearly every continent. And in America, there has also been a contribution, somewhat of an embarrassment. In the 30s, in Nebraska, a tooth was discovered. And scientists at the time thought they had found clear evidence of an ape-man creature on his way to becoming man. And in the London Daily Times, a British newspaper, in the 30s, this photograph or this illustration, drawing of Nebraska, was published. And there you see Nebraska man and his wife, Nebraska woman. Later, it was determined that from this single tooth, Nebraska man had been reconstructed, and that tooth actually was the tooth of an extinct pig. So, in America, the attempt to come up with the missing link failed. Then we can go to Great Britain. Piltdown man. Piltdown man for years stood in the British Museum of Natural History, that is a model of Piltdown man, as a trophy to Darwinian evolution. Piltdown man was found in the area of Piltdown in southern England. I've been there on a couple of occasions. Charles Dawson, who was an amateur biologist, found in a gravel pit not far from his home a skull cap. Later, digging in the same pit, he found a jawbone, thought it was kind of an ape-like jawbone, and of course he put the two together, and the jawbone along with the skull formulated Piltdown man. Later, upon closer investigation, it was discovered the jawbone actually was the jaw of an ape. The teeth had been filed to make them look human-like. The whole thing was a fraud. And to this day, no one is quite certain what happened, whether it was Dawson himself who did this or if somebody planted the jawbone in the pit. And later that this became evidence supposedly for evolution, that's still a question. But whatever the case, Piltdown no longer is even considered to belong in the lineage. It too has been an embarrassment to the evolutionary community. But constantly, we see that this theory is being upgraded. And if you follow the news, whether it be through magazines or journals or television news, you will see, well, almost monthly, there's some new discovery that is found somewhere in some place. They're always finding something a little bit older than the last fossil that was found. Let me give you some examples. August 23rd, 1999. Front of Time magazine, How Man Evolved, Amazing New Discoveries, reveal the secrets of our past. And in this magazine, we have this article, Up from the Apes, remarkable new evidence is filling in the story of how we became human. And again, as we've mentioned, we require more than a story, we need evidence. Here in the magazine, we have the lineage now reconstructed, how we got from there to here. And we note this statement. Common ancestor, no fossils found yet, but scientists believe the human and ape lines diverge between 6 and 4 million years ago. And there we see many of the ones we've already discussed, some placed still in the lineage of man, claiming that these are credible fossils, part ape and part human. The fossil that was found, as you can see, is number one. It's called Ardipithecus ramidus. It was discovered by a Japanese anthropologist who was walking in the desert in Africa and looked over his shoulder at noon and saw in the distance a tooth. And as he states, I quote, "I knew immediately that I had found a very important hominid fossil," even before he picked it up. They claim that it fits into this period of time, a little over 4 million years ago. Then another article, now more recent, July 23rd, 2001, "One Giant Step for Mankind." Meet your newfound ancestor, a chimp-like creature that stood up and walked 5.8 million years ago. So now you see that just in a few years, another discovery has been made, and they have found a fossil that is older than the previous one, from 4.4 million now to 5.8 million years ago. And this is called the new found ancestor. Well, where did they find him? Well, this is rather interesting. Time magazine shows us the location. It's called Ground Zero. Scientists scour barren African hills where humankind was born in more fertile times millions of years ago. And I want you to note what this area looks like. It's an area that shows vast devastation, volcanic destruction. And there on the side of the hill, you see a group of scientists, and they're looking for fossils. In fact, they are panning for fossils. There you see one of the scientists who has a pan. He's shaking through. He's looking for fossil evidence that we've evolved from brute-like creatures. And sure enough, he discovered something. What did he discover? This single bone. And from this single bone, a toe bone, these scientists were able to reconstruct our newfound ancestor. You see, these are the facts. I'm not making this up. My objective of showing you this is to have you think critically. But unfortunately, most people don't. There it is on the page. This toe bone proves the creature walked on two legs. Well, I need more evidence. Remember, this lineage between ape-like creatures and man, they're all extinct. There's none alive today. They lived in the past, and they have to be reconstructed. Then we have another discovery. Now, July 22nd, 2002. Is this our first ancestor? And yes, sure enough, now scientists have gone back 7 million years. In the previous presentation, I presented to you how they claim they found out it was that old. They couldn't even date in the area radiometrically. They had to look at the fossils that were there and then find another area where there were fossils and date that location with radiometric methods. And they've come up with this period of time they think is approximately 7 million years old. And now we've got one that's the oldest that's ever been found. And he's the father of us all. Is this really true? And once more, the lineage goes back further and further in time as the new kid in the block, as they say, has come on the scene. And many people are convinced. Richard Leakey, and I've mentioned his name quite often in this series, in 1982 made a statement, and I think this statement is a fair statement. He said he once believed that we could trace the lineage of man back 15 million years. But he came to this revelation one day that that was impossible. He said he'd made a 12 million year error. He said the furthest we can go back in time to trace our ancestors is to 3.75 million years. And these are just some footprints that were found by his mother, Mary, in Laetolia, Kenya. In other words, here's a scientist who says, you know, I used to believe this, but now I don't. I've made a mistake. That's good. But is he even correct in saying that we can go back 3.75 million years? And if so, what did they find? Well, they found footprints. And these are the famous footprints found by his mother, Mary. By the way, isn't it interesting? Louis Leakey, Richard Leakey, Mary Leakey. Mother, father, and son. These three people have shaped the minds of billions of people with their theory. Well, here's Mary Leakey, and there you can see taking some measurements of a footprint found in volcanic material in Kenya. And they dated this material, and that's where they came up with this age, 3.75 million years. Remember, they've dated the lava dome at Mount St. Helens that was formed in 1980 and since, and it dates millions of years. Are these dates accurate? Well, I think they're questionable. Well, here's the footprints. And this is what Richard says. These footprints are the best evidence we have of what our ancestors were like, and we can trace our lineage back to them. Here is the area in which these footprints were discovered. And I want you to notice there is only a very small amount of material above the volcanic layer. Just a small layer of turf, just a few inches. That has been removed, and there you can see these scientists observing the footprints. And there are other footprints. You will notice on this drawing or this photograph, there's a left, right, left, right, left, right, left by the alleged ancestor as he walked through the volcanic material when it was soft, just like as if you were to walk down a wet cement sidewalk and leave your footprints there. And in fact, if you did, they would have been exactly the same. Why do I say that? Well, notice in the insert, there's a man standing next to one. And his pant leg is rolled up. And his sock is removed. And the National Geographic states, the form of his foot is exactly the same as ours. Now, in the English language, the word exactly means exactly. It's the same. So that's why I say, if you were to walk in this region today, and that material was like a wet cement sidewalk, and you had your socks removed, and you walked down this area, you would leave exactly the same footprints. They would be identical. Now, National Geographic helped sponsor the Leakey Foundation as they were doing the research here. And this was the major discovery. So National Geographic invited an artist by the name of Jay Maternus to come to the location. He does a lot of artwork for various museums. And along with a tracker who would identify the other footprints, and there were many different footprints along with these alleged human footprints. So the tracker identified the footprints, and then Maternus did the artwork to reconstruct what it looked like 3.75 million years ago. And here is the painting. In the footprints that looked like guinea fowl, the artist painted guinea fowl. And they look exactly like guinea fowl look today. In the footprints that looked like giraffe footprints, the artist painted a giraffe. And it looks identical to a giraffe that you would see today anywhere in any zoo. In the footprints that look like elephant footprints, well, the artist painted a herd of elephants. And they look like elephants. In the rabbit footprint, the artist painted a rabbit, just like a modern rabbit. And off to the side, it's difficult to see, there's an ostrich that was painted because there was ostrich footprints there. But in the footprints that are identical to ours, the same, no difference. The artist painted two adult baboon part human-like creatures without any clothes, one carrying a baby, the other a stick. There it is. In the name of science. But is this science? Is this an interpretation of the evidence that shows strong bias to support the evolutionary assumption? Richard Leakey says, as far back as we can go to prove the validity of our human origins are to these footprints. But what was in the footprints? Do you trust the painting? I don't. By the way, I had to censor this particular one. But if you go to the Museum of Natural History in New York, this is what you'll see. These are the models based on those footprints. And just last fall, when I was in New York City, I went to the museum. I was standing in this very location, and a professor and part of a class, university class, came by. And the professor was pointing to these models, and he said, "How could anyone not be convinced?" It's amazing. People don't think critically. We've been looking at the lineage of man. This belief that we've evolved. Remember from the introduction of the textbook, we were told there are no living intermediates. They're all extinct. My question is, are there any intermediates? Do they exist? Or is this something which is simply in the minds of men, a way of attempting to explain our origins based on evolution? In the Human Odyssey, which we read from the introduction earlier, we read this following statement. "The concept of evolution stands as one of the greatest ideas ever formulated by the human mind." Really? I believe that evolution was formulated by the human mind, but it was inspired spiritually. Yes, indeed, Charles Darwin's theory that proposed a way to explain away the Creator has been widely accepted. The statement by Donald Carl Johansson continues, "Through this book and the exhibit on which it is based, you will learn to better understand some of the questions all of us have asked sometime in our life. Who are we? How do we become what we are? How do we fit into the natural world?" Several years ago, on my way back from Russia, as I was traveling through London, a friend of mine went with me to the British Museum of Natural History. I try to go there as often as I can. And I was standing there in the museum, in the portion of the museum on the second floor, devoted to the ape-man lineage. And while we were standing there, looking at the display, a mother and her daughter, I would say she was about 5 years old, came and stood in front of us. And the mother was reading some of the explanation on the display cards to her daughter. And her daughter said, "Mommy, that's not the way God created us." The mother continued to read the evolutionary explanation. The little girl said, "Mommy, Adam and Eve were not apes." And the mother said, "It's okay if you believe in God and the Bible. You're just a little girl. I used to believe in God and the Bible. But now I believe in evolution. And you will too when you get older." Do you know that coded into a child is a knowledge and understanding that there's a creator? Do you know that much of the education community is geared to re-educating children so that they would disbelieve that there's a creator and believe in man's speculation and refuse to acknowledge God's clear revelation? That's exactly what is taking place. Roger Lewin, from his book Bones of Contention, page 348, states the following. "It is an unfortunate truth that fossils do not emerge from the ground with labels already attached to them. And it is bad enough that much of the labeling was done in the name of egoism and a naive lack of appreciation of variation between individuals. It remains inescapably true that applying the correct label is astonishingly difficult, not least because such labels are in a sense arbitrary abstractions, especially so when the material on which the analysis is being done is fragmentary and eroded. It is an incredibly difficult problem, says Lord Zuckerman. It is one so difficult that I think it would be legitimate to despair that one could never turn it into a science. Lord Zuckerman's not a creationist. He's saying, do you know that these interpretations, these labels that we put on the fossils, they're not legitimate. They're not science. And I am reminded what Paul said to Timothy, be cautious of science, falsely so called. There are billions of people today in the world who don't believe there's a creator. Therefore, they don't believe there's a redeemer. Because they believe in evolution. They've been taught to believe. And I believe they have been deceived. O Timothy, keep that which is committed to thy trust, avoiding profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science falsely so called, which some professing have erred concerning the faith. Grace be with thee. That, in summation, is the evolutionary view of our human origins. In our next session, we want to talk about God's view, His revelation given to us from Scripture. And we're going to see, just as we read from Isaiah 55,